contrary to what the wellness zeitgeist may think, you know, the majority of the global population subsists off of carbs. The key is really, you know, to make sure that we don't have too much of a good thing all at once, because that's when our organs become really taxed. Our liver and our pancreas both have to kind of step in to manage the excess energy that we don't need in a given moment to fuel our body. And fiber, which is, by the way, a carbohydrate, has kind of a unique benefit.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. So glad you're listening to Health Power. I have been doing health media in the form of television, radio, and podcasts for 26 years now. And when I got the new book by the wonderful Phoebe Lapine, I was so excited because in 2017, I got to interview about her other fantastic book. By the way, she has 4 books that I got to interview about the Wellness Project. And it feels, Phoebe, like it was yesterday. It was such a good book. This book is so much more than just a cookbook, carnivore. Phoebe, it is such a pleasure to have you back. Although you were on my NPR show then. That was It's Your Health. This is Health Power. But welcome to Health Power. It's good to have you.
So good to see you and talk to you again.
Let me tell a little bit about you. You're a gluten-free chef. You're the voice behind the award-winning blog Feed Me. And like I mentioned, you're the author of 4 books. So in the introduction, you write, if you asked me to describe my desert island meal, it would be something along the lines of what the author David Sedaris answered to a similar interview question. First off, I love David Sedaris, so you got me right there. Oh my God, he is so funny. And secondly, tell us what that meal would be.
Well, I'm stealing his joke. It's a little unfair. I'd have a bowl of pasta served on a bowl made entirely of pasta with shaved pasta on top.
It was a heck of a lot of pasta. And I thought that was so fun. And then you write, also in the introduction, you write that you had a, quote, torrid love affair over the years. And that was talking about your relationship with carbs.
I think when we talked last time, it was right after I had had this massive health overhaul to kind of deal with my Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease. And I was in my 20s at the time. So I had a fraught relationship with any type of dietary omission or, you know, really turning my life upside down. And that was kind of the point of the book and the project at large, which was to take it one baby step at a time and figure out what was really worth my time, money, and energy. But even prior to that, I had done an elimination diet and I discovered that gluten was not a good combo for me. I was very, very, very sensitive, still am to this day. And this was, so it's been 12 years, maybe more, that I've been gluten-free. So it was way before it was a trend or even really talked about that much. So I'd say that was the beginning of me having to really look at what I was eating every single day. And what I was eating every single day was like pizza, pasta, sandwiches, toast. Like, I mean, it was really just a carb fest. And I think it is for a lot of people. I mean, those were kind of my comfort food meals growing up. They were also the things that I first learned how to cook when I got out of college. And my first book was called In the Small Kitchen and was kind of all about finding your way as a very early 20-something in the kitchen in small spaces with limited budget, time, whatever. And carbs are really cheap, really convenient, and really comforting. So there was a lot of them. But then, over the years, I would say during the Wellness Project, a little bit after, and kind of dealing with these chronic health issues, I was getting, you know, so much conflicting advice from medical practitioners and from, you know, Google MD about how I should kind of face carbs. And there's a diet called the autoimmune paleo diet, which is really restrictive, really extreme. You can't heal your autoimmune disease or, you know, reduce your thyroid antibodies without doing this diet. And as someone who, again, really has loved carbs, who made a living as a chef, and, you know, was already a little bit hobbled in that respect by being gluten-free, I was like, I don't know that I can do this really restrictive paleo lifestyle. And then my second kind of health hurdle, my last book, was all about something called SIBO, which is a gut health condition that's said to be kind of the root cause of a lot of people's IBS. And for that, there's something called the low FODMAP diet, which is actually a diet that takes out very specific types of carbohydrates and fibers. So I kind of had another, you know, grappling with carb when it came to that health challenge. And yeah, that was kind of how I arrived at carbivore, was really just trying to take a step back and figure out, you know, how do we eat carbs in this day and age without them causing so much chaos in the body? Because contrary to what the wellness zeitgeist may think, you know, the majority of the global population subsists off of carbs, and the majority of the global population 50, 60 years ago also subsisted almost entirely on carbs, and the chronic illnesses were much rarer. So I just had a hunch that it wasn't necessarily rice or oats's fault.
Yeah. There's so much I love in the book. First of all, you go through so many things about carbs. How does a body metabolize a carb? How can we get carbs to work better for our individual bodies? What are carb companions? I want people to get the book, so I'm not going to give it all away, but I do want you to talk about carb companions.
Leveraging your other macronutrients and then also fiber. So fiber, fat, and protein work synergistically with carbs in the body and can slow down the conversion into glucose and that kind of rush of glucose into our bloodstream. And that's really from a metabolic standpoint where we run into problems. You know, our whole body runs on glucose, which is, you know, the kind of simplest element of both sugars and, you know, complex carbohydrates. It's also the building blocks of fiber, but our body doesn't break down fiber, which is why it's so good for us. It just goes straight through our small intestines into the large intestines and feeds our beneficial gut microbes. Another reason why going super, super low carb is not a great long-term strategy, because we need to maintain the health of our gut microbiome. So the key is really, you know, to make sure that we don't have too much of a good thing all at once, because that's when our organs become really taxed. Our liver and our pancreas both have to kind of step in to manage the excess energy that we don't need in a given moment to fuel our body. And that is where we see a lot of the breakdown that leads to a lot of these modern diseases like diabetes and obesity, PCOS and whatnot. So I think I call my special diet, my strategy in the book, slow carb versus low carb. And one of the key strategies for slowing down that digestive process, slowing down the flooding of our bloodstream with glucose, is to make sure that we have these other macronutrients in our system. So fiber and protein both slow down gastric emptying. So meaning our stomach is going to be a little bit slower to process our food and release it into the small intestines, where it gets absorbed into our bloodstream. And fiber, which is, by the way, a carbohydrate, has kind of a unique benefit. It also helps with slowing the gastric emptying, but it also, once it reaches your small intestine, even though it doesn't get absorbed, it kind of forms this fibrous mesh, this sludge around our intestinal wall that, again, like if you, I like to give people this visual that if you were, you know, straining jam through a fine mesh sieve, or just, you know, like muddling berries to get the juices through, but not any of the skin or the seeds. You can picture there's that kind of fibrous sludge around the mesh. And then if you poured in even a simple juice through that, it's going to be more of a steady drip than kind of a stream that goes straight through it. So I think that's the best visual. And so
that
we
really
need,
is.
Yeah, I have on my Instagram an actual video of me doing this to kind of illustrate what I'm talking about. But that's why fiber is so beneficial and so special, because if you eat fiber first, before you have your carbohydrates, before you have simple sugars, it's just going to take them a little bit longer to make their way through the intestinal wall into your bloodstream.
Yeah, that's so important. Now in chapter two, how to have your cake and eat it too, you give us some great advice. Learn to consume sugar without it consuming you. Eliminate mindless sugar. Don't consume sugar on an empty stomach. Skip the sweet beverages, even juices and smoothies. Treat natural sweeteners the same as regular sugar. Okay, so on that one, I do love my allulose, and I love amaranth. So I'll take a bowl of the amaranth. I'll put a little, I got this great oat milk. I have nothing to do with this company, but I love them because it's not full of thickeners and all this other stuff. It's called Three Trees. It's gluten-free oats. It's water. It's maybe vanilla, and it also has, I think it's got flax seeds and pumpkin seeds. It's like, that's it. It's pretty amazing. And I like to put that on my amaranth, and then I put a little bit, just like a teaspoon of allulose syrup. It doesn't really taste like maple syrup. It's supposed to, but it's like really rich and not super sweet. And without it, I just feel like there's something missing. But for me, that doesn't lead me to want to eat a bunch more sugar. That makes me feel good. Great. That, so, but some people it does, right? Is that, so talk to us about your philosophy on that.
Yeah. So I think breakfast is honestly the time of day that it's most important to choose something low sugar, or even better yet, savory, because it kind of jumpstarts your metabolism for the entire day. So there's a study that, you know, if you eat a bowl of cereal first thing in the morning, it's going to have a very different impact on your blood sugar than if you ate that same bowl of cereal as your second meal of the day or third meal of the day. And that potentially, if you do have some sort of unstable blood sugar response, it's going to mean more cravings and kind of a more troubled carb tolerance for the subsequent meals in the day. Right. And this, by the way, goes, you know, if you are an intermittent faster and you ate your cereal at 9 a.m. versus, you know, 1 p.m., it doesn't matter. It's, again, that concept of having other things in the tank first.
Right.
So that's just something to keep in mind. But I always tell people not to get too bogged down again with the rules and do what feels good for you. If you don't find that your cravings are, you know, triggered from that breakfast, and that breakfast is working for you, and that's fantastic. Other people, you know, may think, God, I'm doing all the healthy things. I'm having, you know, natural sweetener in my oatmeal. I'm using oat milk, and somehow, you know, I'm still like starving by the time lunchtime rolls around. And that is a clear sign that that breakfast is not working for you. Because another one of my big blood sugar and gut health tips is to do meal spacing, which is something I really began to understand when I was studying the digestive process in regards to IBS and SIBO. But it's also really important for blood sugar because, again, our blood sugar goes up and down every time we eat. Even if you were on a complete carnivore diet, even if you were, you know, eating a healthy, quote unquote, fiber rich, healthy fat rich snack, like a handful of almonds, even that is going to mean some sort of impact. It might not be a huge peak and a huge valley afterwards, but it's something. And that really, again, taxes our organs. So I think, you know, kind of the best way to tackle both making sure our digestive organs have time to do their job properly and making sure that we're not constantly putting our immune system on hold so that, you know, our liver, which by the way has like 500 other tasks, can jump in and manage our blood sugar, is to simply, you know, eat bigger meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and to have, you know, ideally 4-ish hours in between those meals for your digestive process to do its thing.
Yeah, that's important. You know, it's so funny that we're talking about cereal because what you said literally played out in my house last week. So I brought my 19-year-old daughter. She came with me to the grocery store. She's like, Mom, you never buy any junk. You never let me get. I said, get the things that you want. Okay. So she gets the Raisin Bran, the kind with sugar on the raisins. It's like got a billion grams of sugar.
Yeah.
She ate a few days in a row. She usually starts the day with amaranth. And she does use maple syrup. She doesn't like the allulose syrup, but she also uses a powdered allulose. So she ends up using a teaspoon of maple syrup instead of what it would take. Mm. Because so, but anyway, that's why we love allulose. And I'm not associated with them, but if there was, but anyway, so like for 3 days in a row, she eats a Raisin Bran. And an hour later, she's hungry. And she's like, Mom, I don't know why I bought this. I shouldn't have bought this. I'm going to get back to my amaranth. And it was good to see she learned it on her own.
I was going
to
say, that's a great parenting lesson right there.
I'm like, oh my gosh, this just happened. She's like, I'm not buying this again. So I love Raisin Bran. But if I'm going to get it, well, first of all, I don't eat gluten. But if I was going to get it for a treat or something, I should say never. I eat gluten once in a while. I would get the kind that doesn't have sugar on the raisins and has the least amount of sugar I can find. There's still going to be some, right?
Yeah.
But I was glad that she felt it in her body, right? And that's what's so important.
And that's, by the way, I mean, that's really impressive to even have that awareness. I think the majority of adults do not have that awareness. And that's really what I try to get people to do. I'm telling you all of these rules and like it ultimately, it doesn't matter which ones you follow. I just want you to pay attention. Yeah. So again, if you are someone who is not making it to lunch or dinner without being absolutely starving, I would say, first of all, like, look at what your meals are and let's figure out how to maybe eat a little bit more, because especially women, so many of us like restrict and have our own notions around portion size. And yeah, generally in America, we could all take a look at our portion size and adjust things. But sometimes it is making sure that we have, you know, more complex carbohydrates on our plate, more healthy fats, just something to sustain us.
You know, I do get hungry like a couple hours after the amaranth. So I do think I need some healthy fat in there somewhere. And probably, I don't know if amaranth is very high in magnesium and some other things. I don't think it's that high in protein.
You can stir in some almond butter or add some whole fruit on top for more fiber, whatever works.
Yeah, I need something to help it out. Yeah. And that's, again, those carb companions are so great.
Yes. You have so many.
This is interesting. You talk about adjusting your diet according to your menstrual cycle. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So naturally, our blood sugar is more elevated at different times in our cycle. So it's a good time to kind of prioritize, again, like loading up on healthy fats, protein, maybe limiting our simple carbohydrates and our sugar a little bit. And the same thing goes, you know, overnight when we sleep is when our blood sugar is naturally at its highest because our organs are off doing other things. So if you have, you know, kind of unstable blood sugar, it can affect your sleep. And then conversely, if you have disruptive sleep, it can really impact your carb tolerance the next day.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to jump into the recipes, and there's so much detail that you share in the beginning of the book, and it's so fantastic. But again, I want people to get the book, and I just want to have you back to jump into more. I made some of your recipes. They're all fantastic. And what I did is I chose some of the ones that really, they all jumped out, but the ones that really like went, so I'm going to have you share some. So I, unfortunately, nuts are not my friend. They make me feel crappy. I get a sore throat, but I'm working with some right now to improve my leaky gut. So eventually, because my dream is if I could eat nuts again, but do you have a summer tomato cashew dressing, which I want to make for my daughter? You have a spicy sesame dressing. And the goal of these, again, is to have that balance, right? So you have healthy fat in all of those.
Like yeah.
The seeds, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first chapter is the only one without traditional carbs. The other chapters are, you know, oats, rice, bread, noodles, potatoes, corn, legumes. But then, you know, we have a lot of condiments and sauces and nut and seed sprinkles, which are kind of my favorite carb companions because it packs, you know, a lot of different things into a small package. But these are things, again, that you can add to your meals to complement your carbs and make sure that you have other things on your plate besides just carbs.
Now tell us about this summer tomato cashew dressing. That looks so good.
Yeah.
Have it.
Yeah. Why not? So you can use, you know, non-peak tomatoes, but I think that it's best in the summertime when you have just like a glut of tomatoes, but it's just cooked really simply on the stovetop quickly. Or maybe I roasted. I actually can't even remember. Haven't made it since last summer. But then you puree it with some cashews, and that kind of creates an even more creamy consistency. And it's really delicious. And you add some vinegar, obviously, but the vinegar of the tomatoes is also really punchy for a vinaigrette. It kind of tastes like a really good tomato soup with like a little extra vinegar, and just really tastes so fresh and delicious on top of like leafy greens in the summertime.
Sounds so good. I love spicy. I love sesame. Tell us about the spicy sesame dressing.
Yeah. So that's with a tahini base. And it's actually something that I use in a recipe in the book for cold sesame noodles. And it's just a really quick thing to make and have in the fridge. And then I like to do it kind of as a sub for peanut noodles, which used to be, I have like a few kind of like lazy dinners in my back pocket. Several of them involve pasta, but one of them has always been peanut noodles. But this is kind of similar, similar time exerted, but a spin on it. So you can use just sesame seeds instead of peanuts for those who are sensitive to nuts. But yeah, it's really delicious and creamy and tastes so good with kind of craggy cucumbers that you just kind of whack into big pieces. And I like to add all sorts of things to that, all sorts of carb companions to that salad. You can do, you know, some shredded cabbage. You could do some shredded rotisserie chicken. You can do some kimchi if you have it in the fridge, or any sort of, you know, shredded sliced carrots. It's just a really good versatile back pocket recipe.
That sounds so good. Now, since you are gluten-free, what is your go-to noodle and do you have a brand? Because I love people to be able to say, oh, this wonderful woman, Phoebe, who's a chef and makes all these great recipes, likes this type of pasta.
I mean, I think there are so many good options now, especially there are some more artisan ones that's you don't always find at the regular store, but from Italy, anything from Italy tends to be the best, honestly. But in terms of my go-to, that's pretty ubiquitous. I like jovial brown rice pasta. I think it's a really good texture. I started by liking the quinoa pastas a little bit more, but I think jovial is kind of superior in many ways. And then for fresh pasta, I really like Capello's, which is also paleo for those who care. And then there's a brand called Manini's that you can't find everywhere, but they have this like lemon thyme linguine. Ooh. And it's just, it's a special treat. It's really delicious.
Now go back to the second one. How is it paleo? Is it, what did they use? I mean, isn't it still flour based, rice flour or oat flour or something?
I think they use tapioca starch, maybe coconut flour, almond flour, gnocchi. They have lasagna sheets. They have fettuccine. It's all in the freezer section.
Yeah, I've seen that at Whole Foods. Yeah.
Manini's is usually in the refrigerated section.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's good to know. You know, I tried the jovial cassava flour pasta, and when I didn't like the spaghetti, it was like kind of, I don't know how to extract, but I did. I didn't mind the littler types of pasta from that.
I prefer the brown rice version of the jovial, but it's nice that they offer that. And, you know, I say to people who are paleo and who do, you know, eat fewer grains, like the book is actually very adaptable for you too. The whole potato chapter, pretty much you can eat. And then the pasta and the bread chapter, you know, if you just source your own paleo versions of those things, you can make most of the recipes.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. All right, let's jump into oats. Now, this one just jumped out at me because it sounds so interesting. Steel cut oat congee with bok choy. So I went, oats with bok choy. That's so interesting. I don't know what a congee is.
Okay. So congee is usually made with rice. It's a traditional Chinese porridge that's really easy to digest. I actually have a recipe for congee in my SIBO Made Simple book as kind of a good prep for, there's a breath test for SIBO, and you can only eat white rice and like protein the day before. So I'm like, I'll make a congee for that because it's just basically chicken simmered with rice, and it kind of thickens into this like rich bone broth porridge. But it is like, you know, perfect for a bad gut day. Perfect if you need to like hydrate in some way and just like retain some water. And yeah, I find it very nourishing. I had dental surgery last week, so I ate a vat of congee. But steel cut oat congee is just replacing the rice with steel cut oats. And it's not quite as starchy as, you know, a rice-based congee, but it really works. Especially like steel cut oats, you know, can have a little bit of a bite to them. And they add a little bit more texture to the congee that I think some people will enjoy. And then, yeah, I just top that with a jammy egg and some sauteed bok choy.
Oh, that sounds really
good. Yeah, it's a good dinner or kind of make ahead savory breakfast.
Nice. Now, of course, a ginger peach cake with oat crumble. Oh my God, that looks so good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about rice. I took two from the rice category, even though there was many. Warming mushroom and wild rice soup. Looks amazing. And oven risotto with shrimp, asparagus, and peas. Now, does that risotto, is that dairy-free or is there a dairy-free option?
It is. Yeah. The Italians would never mix cheese and seafood in a risotto or anything, really. Yeah.
Then I'm going to try that.
But you can add Parmesan if you want.
Okay. You know? And they have the vegan Parmesan too. I haven't tried it, but I've seen it.
But I think it's delicious with that. It's actually a really kind of light, springy dish. And it's using a technique where you don't have to stand over the stove and stir your risotto all day. You just kind of simmer it in some stock and white wine in the oven. And then the shrimp and the asparagus are both really quick cooking. So you kind of add them to the pot and they almost cook right there, just mixing with the hot liquid.
Oh, wow. I have tried so many skin and hair care products. I can't even tell you. It's insane. I mean, at one point, the closet in my bathroom was full with every imaginable product. And then I found what works, and that is OneEarthBodyCare.com. I am in love with their shampoo and conditioner bars. Completely changed the game for my daughter, who had a hard time finding a good shampoo and conditioner for her hair. Their face and body is amazing. I love their day and night oil, all natural ingredients, of course, and all of this, essential oils, really great stuff. And of course, the deodorant has changed my life because I am no longer smelly. So go check them out now at OneEarthBodyCare.com. Now, the buckwheat, millet, and quinoa. Buckwheat crepes with leek confit, salmon, and eggs. Oh my God, that sounds amazing. Mom's millet flour fish fry with tarragon chive tartar sauce, the ratatouille quinoa bake, and of course, the PB&J cups with crunchy quinoa. Those look amazing. Definitely start the PB&J cups.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with those Justin's peanut butter cups, and some of them have like puffed crunchy quinoa on top. So I thought that would be fun to recreate. And the nice thing about making, you know, your own treats at home is you can really control the sugar and the ingredients. So buying 70% cacao chocolate, which is lower in sugar and just really rich and delicious. And then I have a recipe for a raspberry chia seed jam, which doesn't have any added sugar. So you can use that or a store-bought option as kind of the base, and then just a little bit of peanut butter, and then the crunchy quinoa on top, which I will say you can't quite get puffed. You can't puff your quinoa in the same way at home as they do in an industrial plant, but it still gives like kind of a little bit of texture on top. And then again, if you're paleo grain-free, you can just omit it.
Right. Now, I love quinoa, so I did make the ratatouille quinoa bake, and that was delicious.
Yay!
Yes, that was really good because I love a good ratatouille. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, I'm thrilled that you selected that recipe because it's one of the few without a picture, which I always worry about because most people are more attracted to the items with pictures. And it's funny, the SIBO book too, I love it when people send me photos of certain recipes that don't have pictures. And there's some sleeper hits in there that just aren't, you know, the most attractive. I think the ratatouille bake would have been attractive though. But yeah, I love doing a quinoa bake. It's really hands-off. I also have a quinoa paella that's a similar technique, but you essentially can kind of cook your quinoa like a pilaf by simmering it in the ratatouille mixture until it kind of puffs up and becomes light and fluffy, but then also gets like kind of the crispy edges from the casserole in the oven.
Right. Yeah.
It's just an easy one-pan dish.
Absolutely. Now, on the buckwheat crepes with leek confit, salmon, and eggs, to me, buckwheat has a very strong flavor. So I'm thinking because their crepes are thinner, do they get light like a regular crepe?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a savory flavor and not to be paired with, you know, Nutella. But I did it with leek confit and salmon. But, you know, the leek confit is like a make ahead condiment that you can store for a while. But obviously, it's a little bit more involved than a store bought option. But you can kind of use anything you want. You can put some pesto in there and then just smoke salmon. And then the egg itself really cooks in like a minute on the crepes. So you, I think, can make the crepe batter and make them to order throughout the week. Or you can pre-make all the crepes and then just reheat it really quickly before you eat if this is, you know, not a special occasion, but just a weekday breakfast. But yeah, it's a very thin batter. They get really thin and crispy. It's kind of based on my favorite crepe place in Paris. Ooh. And they're from Brittany, the buckwheat crepes originally, and in theory, 100% gluten-free using 100% buckwheat. It's hard to find. I mean, in our country, most of the time you have to ask, and sometimes they cut it with traditional AP flour. But I really wanted to try and recreate the original with that. Oh, and good. I cut mine with a little bit of rice flour because I do think it helps to kind of soften the buckwheat flavor.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to try that. All right, moving on to noodles. Okay, so what I'm planning to make this week is a green curry ramen with eggplant and green beans. I love green curry. I did make one more, which was a spaghetti and harissa bolognese. I didn't put the almonds on mine.
Of course.
But I just mint. But I love a good bolognese. So let's talk about these two. They're so good.
So the bolognese is the cover recipe, the cover star. But yes, it's kind of a Mediterranean spin on a traditional bolognese. There's red peppers in there, kind of instead of celery. And there's harissa paste in there, which is a North African spicy red pepper condiment. And it just adds a little bit of fire and sweetness to the background of the bolognese. And then, you know, as kind of a carb companion, I make a mint almond gremolata, which is essentially lemon zest, fresh herbs, and ground almonds or finely chopped almonds. And I just think that adds a little bit of texture to the ragu and the noodles. And then, just that added carb companion, which is always a bonus.
It was so good because I had a bolognese for a treat a couple months ago. It was so heavy because there's so much cream in it.
Yeah.
I'm not used to dairy or regular pasta. I felt horrible afterwards. I'm like, what was I thinking? So when I got your book and I saw this, I thought, ooh, I can make a different kind of bolognese.
I have harissa probably in too many places in this book. but I think it's actually much easier to find at the markets these days. Yeah. And you can, I think Mina, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, is a great brand because they offer both a spicy version and a mild version. So if you're someone who can't handle too much heat, just use the mild version and you'll just get all the benefit of the flavor without, you know, too much fire.
Oh yeah. I should definitely try that. Now, when you make ramen for the green curry ramen, I saw recently, I bought it. I haven't used it yet. It's a buckwheat sweet potato ramen.
Oh.
I don't know why I haven't tried it yet. I was turned off again by the buckwheat, but I'm gonna try it. What kind of ramen do you use?
I use Lotus Foods brand, which is fantastic. They have a few different varieties of ramen. They have a millet brown rice, a jade rice, which is like green rice. And I think they have a black rice one too.
Oh, no.
The black rice will obviously stain your or color your curry broth. So it may not be green at the end of the day, maybe like brownish. I think it was the brown rice millet that I use most commonly in that. Okay. And it's a great dish because you can cook the ramen directly in the coconut curry. So again, you're not dirtying another pot. And that was a go-to of ours during COVID. And this one I designed to be more like a traditional green curry with eggplants and green beans and peppers. But we used to do it with just frozen vegetables in like the really dark days. So it was like a complete pantry dish. You just had your curry paste, your coconut milk, all sorts of, you know, like frozen broccoli, frozen kale, frozen spinach, maybe even frozen green beans we used. And you just threw everything kind of in a pot and didn't have many dishes to do at the end. It was a real winner.
Yeah, that is really nice. Now, I love skirt steak and I'm looking at this grilled skirt steak and vermicelli bowls with nook chum? Is that how you say
nook
that?
Nook chum, yeah.
Nook chum. What is that?
So that's a Vietnamese-inspired dish, and it has a lot of components, but they're all very streamlined, and it's going to be perfect once the weather starts to heat up and you can use a grill. But you can, of course, you know, just sear your skirt steak instead. And you can also, if you don't like skirt steak, it's a really good formula to use with shrimp as well. It's really delicious. But one of my kind of carb strategies that I like is to create these bowls where you have to kind of dig through all of the carb companions, all the add-ons to get to the carbs below. So with these bowls, you know, you put your vermicelli on the bottom, you top it with this incredible slaw and then your skirt steak and then a little bit of kind of it, the nook cham sauce does have sugar in it traditionally, and mine has a little bit less, but you still need that balance of flavors. Sure. The book is definitely not a sugar-free book. It's just kind right. of a mindfully yes. sugar inclusive book, and really like makes the sugar count.
Exactly.
Makes it worth it.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's something in the beginning of the book when you're talking about that mindless sugar is that I think there was a statistic you shared with 80% of products in the grocery store yeah. shelves have sugar. So don't get your sugar from that.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of cooking too, is that there's no yeah. such thing as mindless sugar when you're cooking, unless right? you're buying, you know, store-bought sauces that are pre-made and whatnot that you might not think to look. But right. the beauty of doing it yourself is that you know exactly what's going into your food and you can kind of moderate accordingly.
Right.
I think that's why I think mindless sugar is frankly, you know, more dangerous than dessert. It's because you don't really know what you're eating, and you could have cravings off the back of some of mm-hmm. those things, like your sandwich bread and your pasta sauce, which you aren't really going to think of necessarily as places that you have to worry. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, that could be inadvertently driving cravings later on. So it's not about being insane and weeding out your entire pantry, but I do think it's really helpful to turn over your items and look at the ingredient list so that you know what's going on. Obviously, yeah. the like 1 gram of sugar in your mayonnaise isn't going to like make yeah. or break you. But at the end of the day, if you're eating a lot of packaged foods, it does add up. And personally, I get a lot more conscious pleasure from having a piece of cake or a cookie at the end of the meal. And I would right. be happy to buy crackers that don't have sugar at all in them yeah. And be able to enjoy my sugar quota later on in the form of dessert.
Right. That makes such a difference. You know, I really like what you're talking about with the carbs are at the bottom, right? So rather than going out and you get vermicelli and it's like 99% noodles and there's a couple of veggies floating around, right? Or maybe there's a chive. Maybe
yeah,
a piece of
I think I right? just like you, I mean, I probably eat larger quantities of carbs than you do, but it's all about just shifting the ratios a little bit to making mm-hmm. sure, you yeah. know, that instead of 75 to 90% yeah. noodles in these dishes, that it's really rounded out by, you know, a pound at yeah. least of vegetables and protein.
All right. Well, we're moving on to spuds, which I love. Potatoes love me. I love potatoes. I got a spring potato leek soup with asparagus. I'm going to make that. It's almost spring. Mm-hmm. I love latkes. Hanukkah is my favorite holiday growing up because of the latkes.
Yeah.
Braised coconut lime, sweet potatoes, and bok choy. That sounds so interesting. I love sweet potatoes. I love bok choy. I never thought of putting them together. How did that come to you?
So I also really, really love a Greek lemon potato.
Oh, and I love a Greek lemon
yeah,
potato.
And the technique is really interesting because you just essentially cut huge wedges of potatoes and put like way too much chicken stock and lemon juice into the pan. So you're almost braising them essentially right. in a lot of liquid. And then you cook them and cook them and cook them until all of that has reduced and flavored the potatoes. It's not like a crispy potato per se, but it's like a soft and really flavorful one. And I was like, how can I switch up the flavor profile and do that with something else? So for this, it's instead of the chicken stock and the lemon juice, it's coconut milk and lime. And it really creates like a punchy, really delicious sweet potato. And then the bok choy is kind of cut into similar spears and is like a nice size visual paired with the sweet potatoes as a side.
Oh, that sounds so good. All right, moving on to loaves and crusts. This sounds really good. Sheet pan chicken, BLT, panzanella with vinegared tomatoes. What is a panzanella?
So panzanella is an Italian bread salad, essentially.
Oh.
So usually made with kind of stale, crusty bread, toasted up like a crouton. So kind of like a crouton salad. And this one, again, the ratio is a little bit different. But I think the beauty of this recipe is really the convenience. So I have the chicken and the bacon kind of baking directly on the sheet pan. Then you take those things out and you throw your bread down into all of those delicious fatty juices. And then you bake that in the oven, and then you just chop your chicken and toss everything together with these vinegared tomatoes and with fresh lettuces. And it's just a really easy one pan kind of main course salad for summertime.
That sounds amazing. Now, I'm definitely going to make this because I love butternut squash and I love leeks. And every Thanksgiving, the stuffings, wherever I go, it's always just white bread. It's always gluten. It's never, but this looks amazing. So tell us about this butternut squash and leek stuffing.
Yes. So I am the stuffing girl. We have a huge family Thanksgiving, like 50 plus people at this point. And yeah, it's a potluck affair. And I bring the gluten-free stuffing every year. I've been a little offended that they've added like a regular stuffing to the mix. And then every year people are surprised. They're like, oh, the like vegetables. Gluten-free stuffing is so good. I'm like, I know.
Hello, I'm
like, you could just bring mine. Yeah, yeah, no one will notice. But I literally make a different one every single year. I riff slightly, and I truly can say that this combination has become the winner over the years because I've tried a lot, and it's just roasted butternut squash, and then the leek confit, similar to what I make for the buckwheat crepes, is like kind of this like just jammy condiment that laces the cubes of bread, and it's sweet, it's savory, and it's really, really good.
Oh my gosh. All right. Now to my favorite food, which I can eat sometimes, thank God, corn. These look so beautiful. I picture these at like a fancy party with somebody. What would you like? A crispy polenta cake with eggplant, cherry tomato, caponata. Well, yes, thank you. Like, those look amazing. Baked fish tacos with ginger mango slaw, Mexican street corn and collard green salad, crispy polenta cakes. I mentioned those, jalapeno pumpkin and corn pudding. Oh my gosh. Now, back when I would do corn day, I would make all these. I wouldn't be able to move the next day. I'd have such a headache, but that would be. So what are some of your favorites of the ones that I mentioned?
Well, the polenta cakes, you know, it's so nice because you can cut a smaller square for yourself if you want. You can kind of make them into any shapes. And they actually are something that I used to make all the time for my catering menu when I was really, you know, working hard as a chef in New York City. But turn the warm polenta out onto a sheet pan and chill it until it's hard. And then, yeah, you can cut it into squares. I have all sorts of round cutters, and that's for my cocktail parties. I would make tiny little circles and top them with something delicious. I actually used to do like ricotta and truffle honey for my cocktail parties, but it's a great make ahead option. You can freeze them and then just recrisp them in the oven. It's a few different steps, but again, I think it's a really good make ahead dish. And then the eggplant caponata is actually a riff on a recipe that was in my first book, In the Small Kitchen. It was one of the first things I learned how to make. I studied abroad in Rome, and I used to make all sorts of eggplant dishes because I was on like a crazy budget. So it was like a lot of like cucina povera, like pasta with like nothing in it, and then eggplant on toast, just like eggplant caponata on toast. So this is on a little polenta vehicle, and it's really good.
Oh, gosh. And then legumes, which I love, especially lentils. I have to say, this is also on my menu this week. Smashed chickpea shakshuka with summer tomatoes. There's a really great Mediterranean restaurant in my town. It's very pricey, but I'll go there once in a while. Their shakshuka is delicious. They put quinoa in there. Yours looks phenomenal.
So I thought I was crazy for putting chickpeas in mine.
they put chickpeas in theirs too.
Oh, yeah. Funny.
And then they put it on quinoa, but I don't want to wait till the summer, so I'm going
to
find some good tomatoes.
You don't have to. I know. You're really attracted to all the tomato recipes.
I love tomatoes.
A Middle Eastern kind of baked egg dish in a spiced tomato sauce. I actually traditionally make it not with summer tomatoes, with just canned tomatoes, and you can absolutely sub that for this. But I do think that, you know, again, red peppers, tomatoes peak in the summer season. It cooks up so fast if you, you know, after you get all the chopping done. And then, yeah, the chickpeas just add a little bit of extra bulk. It can be a perfect weeknight dinner. I think actually shakshuka is like one of the great breakfast for dinner recipes.
Yes.
And then you kind of make little wells in the mixture and can bake your eggs. And it's another example. You can make the chickpea tomato mixture in advance and just serve it for brunch the next day with all your eggs baked in, or make individual ones just throughout the week with the mixture.
Sounds so good. I'm also looking at the barbecue chicken thighs with black-eyed peas and collards. I've never had black-eyed peas before.
Oh, they're so good.
Really? Yeah, I need to do that. That sounds delicious.
Yeah, that's a favorite. My husband's family is from South Carolina, and so when I go down there for the holidays, that's something that I'll make to kind of feed a crowd. It's, again, another really good skillet one-pan meal.
Now, I mentioned all the recipes that Chef Doug to me. Let me tell you, there was more than this, but I thought we'll be here forever, so I want to have you back. Are there any recipes, Phoebe, that you were hoping to point out from your fabulous book?
Oh, I mean, not necessarily point out, but I have a lot of like really good weeknight chicken recipes in here. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'm known for on my website is a chicken and rice casserole. And I created a really good one for the book in the rice chapter. It's a Moroccan chicken and rice casserole, a little sweet and sour. So there's some dried fruit in there, minimal, but some dried fruit in there. Really good turmeric to create that gorgeous yellow rice color, and then thinly sliced carrots and shallots. And it all, again, it's a dump and stir, throw it into a skillet or a casserole dish, and it cooks in the oven for about 40 minutes and dinner's just done. And that's the beauty of a chicken and rice casserole and why I love them.
Oh, absolutely. And how about this? Ina Garten. I love this book. You must have been so excited. Yes. It's fabulous.
Such a great blurb. Such a great endorsement. So grateful to her. Yes. And yeah.
That is so wonderful. Phoebe, tell us all the ways that we find you.
Absolutely. So I've been doing a ton of kind of blood sugar tips on Instagram at Phoebe Lapine, just my name. I have a lot of free recipes on feedmephoebe.com. And then if you want to learn more about the book, you can go to carbivorecookbook.com. And I have actually some really great bonuses for those who pre-order. May extend it a little bit through launch month, but I have a free 2-week course called the Blood Sugar Bootcamp. And then I'll also be doing a live cooking class that anyone who's ordered the book in time can join during launch week.
Really? Oh, I got to talk to you about that blood sugar boot camp. That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, go get it. Go get it.
You're amazing. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much,
Lisa. I feel like I literally just, it was 2017, right? When your book came out?
Yeah, a long time ago.
We just chatted the other day. So it's just super fun. I hope you'll come back. There's so much to talk about. Oh, good. All right, everybody, check out Health Power 5 days a week. Rate, review, subscribe. It's in the top 0.5% of all podcasts. I worked very hard and I'm very excited. And I have wonderful guests like Phoebe. So everybody, tell your friends, tell your family, and keep coming back.
Well, that's it for our show today. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. And we would appreciate it if you could please rate and review and leave a comment, because the more you engage with our podcast, the more you will find it and help other people find it wherever they listen to their podcast. So be sure to follow us. I'm at Andrea Donsky and at Naturally Savvy. And Lisa?
At Lisa Davis, MPH.
Thank you so much. And please share this episode, because the more you share shows you care. We'll see you next time.